Good evening. It's September 14th, 2023. The time is 21:39 Eastern Daylight Time. That's 21:39 hours military time, or 24 hour time for daylights, Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Ward Green, yours truly, here with you again. And our study is from the Ark of Urartu, Chapter 1, Paragraph 7. Gilgamesh has been identified as a ruler of ancient times. He features in the Sumerian clay tablets of the Epic of Gilgamesh. Very famous work, the Epic of Gilgamesh, the oldest unsourced account of the deluge. Interesting, the word unsourced was used there. In that work, the Ark is described as being an iku in area. We talked about this before. We looked at this paragraph. An iku is compared to today's unit area, the acre in size. Even sounds like it. Iku, acre. And the iku given as 120 cubits square with a Babylonian cubit of 21 inches, the deck area of the Ark is calculated. Length and width are both 120 by 21 inches. And therefore, we have 120 times 21 times 120 times 21. And we get, in square inches, 6,350,400. That's 6,350,400. As one square inch is 1/144th of a square foot, because a square foot is 12 inches times 12 inches in area, which is 144. So a square inch is 1/144 of a square foot. And so we get 6,350,400 divided by 144 to convert to square feet. The answer is 44,100 square feet. Accepting when we can accept that Noah's Ark has been measured with radar and metal detectors at Uzengili and found as 6,180 inches long. That means anyone may now measure the Ark's area with an aerial shot, because you can calibrate. If you get a direct overhead aerial shot, you can directly calibrate, or even if you just know the angle of what of the aerial shot from which angle it was taken, you can also recalibrate that. But if you have a direct overhead aerial shot, knowing what the actual length is, you can calibrate everything to that length, and that means you know what the width is also, and you know everything about that area. And when I did the calculation, I found the area of the Ark is in fact quite close to the modern acre. The acre at 66 by 660 feet is 98.7755% of the ancient iku. And we know that the Ark was said to be in the Epic of Gilgamesh, an iku in area. So since the iku is very similar to the actual acre, and I found the area of the Ark was almost exactly a modern acre, therefore the iku was the correct area given by the ancient account in the Epic of Gilgamesh. Very close to it, because 98.7755 is pretty close to 100%. As a comparison of the acre with the Ark, or with the iku, I should say. The acre and the iku are the two units of area, one of them being very ancient, the iku, and the acre being the modern one. Gilgamesh gets the dimensions of the Ark directly from its builder, at least as told in the account of the ancient text. And the builder was called in that text, Utnapishtim, who is said to be a deluge survivor. So he could have been one of the later descendants, but he's not, because he's said to be a deluge survivor. So he'd be either Noah or one of the sons of Noah. Noah lived 350 years after the deluge, from Genesis 9, 28, and 29, so that Gilgamesh evidently lived within 350 years after 32, that is, 3282, or 3282 BCE, because that was the date of the deluge. Noah would have been dead if we would go 350 plus 1 years after that date. So if it's Noah we're talking about, then if Utnapishtim, that is Noah, then Gilgamesh must have been alive before that period of 350 years after the deluge expired. It's just a period of time. There's no event that occurred at that point in time that we know of, other than the fact that Noah died. We are wise to be wary, though, of evidence based on myth, meaning Gilgamesh is the myth. We may have dated the deluge in the Bible we have reason to believe as historical. You see, we're not even sure at this point if we really have the correct date for the deluge, 3282. That's what we've got, based on all the evidence we've accumulated. But the Bible, we have no reason to believe. We do have reason to believe as historical. Of course we do. It's just that the Bible, of course, doesn't have a chronology built into it. Not without secular history. There has to be some reference point within secular history in order to get a chronology. And we require more than that in our chronology. We require a lot of correspondence to secular history throughout that time period of all of civilization. But without a date for Gilgamesh, Gilgamesh may be a manifestation of mythical characters of various ages or time periods. There is a tale about the world's first king, Nimrod, that tells how he came to be the first to wear a crown when he saw in a vision a crown coming down from heaven. The story causing some to miss the idea that he had it manufactured. He may have seen it in a vision, but he didn't then put that one on his head. He had to build the crown himself. Gilgamesh, who some say was Nimrod, had sought immortality when he went to see Utnapishtim. And as he saw the wall of heaven, he saw the crown of its summit in shape a diadem. Does this prove the object at Uzengili is Noah's Ark? Question mark. And that's the end of our study for today in the Ark of Urartu. But we've reviewed what we looked at before, because that's fairly complex information when we have to consider that the Babylonian cubit is 21 inches and the Iku is 120 cubits square. And because this story was a Babylonian story, and we're assuming they're using the 21-inch cubit, it's quite a complex circumstance that we're dealing with. Our proverb for today, little ones, is from Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 3. If the clouds are filled with water, they empty out a sheer downpour upon the earth. And if a tree falls to the south, or if to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will prove to be. So in other words, there are ways of verifying what the truth is. Because the tree will not be in both places, it will be in one or the other. Probably one of the reasons why Einstein did not like quantum theory, because quantum theory would have us believe that the tree could be in both places at the same time, and it would depend on when we actually took a look at it. At that moment, would be the time when the tree would have to determine which of those two was correct. Did it fall to the south or to the north? That's what quantum theory is like. It's got a probability associated with everything. Nothing is certain. Whereas this is more common sense. If the clouds are filled with water, well, it rains. And if the tree falls to the south or to the north, wherever it falls, that's where it will be found. It's a very common sense, or very probably uncommon in our world nowadays, but it's a very sensible line of reasoning. Now, Joshua chapter 2. Moses has died, and the Israelites have gone across the Jordan, or at least they were very close to Jericho. I'm not sure if they crossed the Jordan yet. I think they're just spying out the land at this point. I don't think they crossed the Jordan. Because if we look at Joshua chapter 1, they're just talking about the idea that they're going to cross the Jordan. Right, but they haven't done it yet. And they're talking about the courage that they want Joshua, that everybody wants Joshua to exhibit. They want Joshua to be courageous. They need Joshua to be courageous, not just want him to be courageous. It's essential that Joshua is courageous. But they haven't crossed the Jordan. Then Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men out secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, "Go, take a look at the land and Jericho." So they went and came to the house of a prostitute woman whose name was Rahab, and they took up lodging there. In time it was said to the king of Jericho, "Look, men from the sons of Israel have come in here tonight to search out the land." At that the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men that came to you that have come into your house, for it is to search out all the land that they have come." Meantime, the woman took the two men. There were two men that had come to her, and she concealed them, and she proceeded to say, "Yes, the men did come to me, and I did not know from where they were." And it came about at the closing of the gate by dark, at the closing of the city gate by dark, that the men went out. "I just do not know where the men have gone. Chase after them quickly, for you will overtake them." She, though, had taken them up to the roof, and she kept them out of sight among stalks of flax, laid in rows for her upon the roof. And the men chased after them in the direction of the Jordan at the fords, and they shut the gate immediately after those chasing after them had gone out. So, she was less than truthful to these men who came seeking for these spies that had come to her. And the men chased after them in the direction of the Jordan at the fords, and they shut the gate immediately after those chasing after them had gone out. As for these spies who were with Rahab, before they could lie down, she herself came up to them on the roof, and she went on to say to the men, "I do know that Jehovah will certainly give you the land, and that the fright of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land have become disheartened because of you. For we have heard how Jehovah dried up the waters of the Red Sea from before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, namely Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction." So obviously, the spies had to cross the Jordan in order to go to Jericho and spy on it. And go, they did it, but they came to Rahab, and she's concealing them, but they had crossed the Jordan to get to her. "When we got to hear it," she continued, Then our hearts began to melt, and no spirit has arisen yet in anybody because of you before, or I should say for, Jehovah your God is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. And now please swear to me by Jehovah that because I have exercised loving kindness toward you, you also will certainly exercise loving kindness toward the household of my father. And you must give me a trustworthy sign. And you must preserve alive my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters and all who belong to them. And you must deliver our souls from death. At that the men said to her, our souls are to die instead of you people. If you will not tell about this matter of ours, it must also occur that when Jehovah gives us the land, we also shall certainly exercise loving kindness and trustworthiness toward you. After that, she had them descend by a rope through the window, for her house was on a side of the wall, and it was on the wall that she was dwelling. She was on the wall of the city where she was dwelling, and she proceeded to say to them, go to the mountainous region that those in pursuit may not come in contact with you, and you must keep hid there 3 days until those in pursuit have come back, and afterward you may go in your own direction. In turn, the men said to her, we are free from guilt respecting this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Look, we are coming into the land, this cord of scarlet thread. A cord of scarlet thread you should tie in the window by which you have had us descend, the same window, and your father and your mother and your brothers and all the household of your father you should gather to yourself into the house. And it must occur that anyone who goes out of the doors of your house into the open, his blood will be upon his own head. And we shall be free from guilt. And everyone who continues with you in the house, his blood will be on our heads if a hand should come to be upon him. And if you should report this matter of ours, we shall also have become free from guilt respecting this oath of yours that you have made us swear. To this she said, according to your words, so let it be. With that she sent them off, and they went their way. After that she tied the scarlet cord in the window. So they went and came to the mountainous region and kept dwelling there 3 days until the pursuers had come back. Now the pursuers were looking for them on every road, and they did not find them. And the two men proceeded to descend again from the mountainous region and to cross over and come to Joshua the son of Nun. And they began to relate to him all the things that had happened to them. And he went on to say to Joshua, Jehovah has given all the land into our hand. Consequently, all the inhabitants of the land have also grown disheartened because of us. That's the end of Joshua chapter 2. The spies, we see, were successful in establishing a liaison with somebody in the city. And somebody who was, in fact, called Rahab and who was willing to help them. So that was a very successful mission, was it not? Now we have Revelation chapter 21. John, it's very near the end of the book of Revelation now. One more chapter after this. John says, he wrote this. Still continuing his vision in heaven, revealed by Jesus, John writes, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the former heaven and the former earth had passed away, and the sea is no more. I saw also the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, and prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. With that I heard a loud voice from the throne say, look, the tent of God is with mankind. And he will reside with them, and they will be his peoples. And God himself will be with them, and he will wipe out every tear from their eyes. And death will be no more. Neither will mourning, nor outcry, nor pain be any more. The former things have passed away. And the one seated on the throne said, look, I am making all things new. Also he says, write, because these words are faithful and true. And he said to me, they have come to pass. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To anyone thirsting, I will give from the fountain of the water of life free. Anyone conquering will inherit these things, and I shall be his God, and he will be my son. But as for the cowards, and those without faith, and those who are disgusting in their filth, and murderers, and fornicators, and those practicing spiritism, and idolaters, and all the liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur. This means the second death. And there came one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls, which were full of the seven last plagues, and he spoke with me and said, Come here, I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. So he carried me away in the power of the Spirit to a great and lofty mountain, and he showed me the holy city of Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God and having the glory of God. Its radiance was like a most precious stone, as a jasper stone, shining crystal clear. It had a great and lofty wall, and had 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and names were inscribed, which are those of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel. On the east there were 3 gates, and on the north 3 gates, and on the south 3 gates, and on the west 3 gates. The wall of the city also had 12 foundation stones, and on them the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. Now the one who was speaking with me was holding as a measure a golden reed, that he might measure the city and its gates and its wall. And the city lies foursquare, and its length is as great as its breadth, like the Iku, right? And he measured the city with the reed 12,000 furlongs. Its length and breadth and height are equal, so it's cube-shaped. Also, he measured its wall 144 cubits. According to a man's measure, at the same time, an angel's. Now the structure of its wall was jasper, and the city was pure gold, like clear glass. The foundations of the city's wall were adorned with every sort of precious stone. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardius, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th hyacinth, the 12th amethyst. Also the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each one of the gates was made of one pearl, and the broadway of the city was pure gold as transparent glass. And I did not see a temple in it, for Jehovah God the Almighty is its temple. Also the Lamb is, and the city has no need of the sun nor of the moon to shine upon it, for the glory of God lighted it up, and its lamp was the Lamb. And the nations will walk by means of its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it, and its gates will not be closed at all by day, for night will not exist there, and they will bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it. But anything not sacred, and anyone that carries on a disgusting thing and a lie, will in no way enter into it. Only those written in the Lamb's scroll of life will. That's the end of Revelation chapter 21, and the end of our Bible reading for today. Now we are faced with about 9 minutes, which is okay, it's good. I don't have any water. I don't have a single drop of water here. So I better get some water. If I can find any. Have a little tiny bit that I don't have to pour out of a large vessel. Otherwise I have to pour it out of the large vessel, which would be more time consuming, and who knows what might happen if I tried to do that when I didn't have to. So got 9 minutes. I wish I had not got up, but because now I'm wanting to take a bathroom break. I can't do it without interrupting the video. So hopefully I'll calm down again here. Let's see. So I was thinking I wanted to talk about these new electric cars, the EVs. There's so many of them, and the thing is, it's very important to realize, I believe, that in a very few years, these electric vehicles are going to be much cheaper, much cheaper. The reason why they're so expensive right now is because they're trying to, you know, completely take advantage of the general public by offering them at a higher price, and they're producing them first of all for the wealthy people. So they're producing all the luxury models, like made by Mercedes and BMW and Jaguar, you know, Porsche. They're all producing electric vehicles, and they're very pricey. Some of them in Canadian dollars are close to $200,000, but you can get them for more like $100,000, which is still a lot of money. I mean, if I buy a car that's, with tax included, about $65,000 Canadian, and I finance only, or if I pay a down payment of $40,000, there's also in Canada a $5,000 rebate from the environmental, you know, branch of the government that's trying to encourage buying electric cars. But I'd still be paying $500 a month if I wanted to pay it off in 4 years, I think it is, something like that. I mean, it's because with an interest rate of 6% or something like that. But, I mean, $500 a month for 4 years is not bad to buy a $65,000 car, but I'd have to produce the $40,000 cash to make a down payment of that size. To do that, I'd have to take it out of my bank account somewhere, but one of my bank accounts. But that's a lot of money when, I mean, there are going to be $20,000 electric vehicles. And the only reason to buy a luxury vehicle, it seems to me, is if you're planning on driving around North America, you know, time and time again. Just if you live in your car, then you have a reason to have luxury in your cars to make your life more pleasant. But if you're just making a grocery run to the local grocery store 3 miles away, and that's all the driving you do, why would you want a luxury car for that? I mean, is it really worth it? I mean, it might be nice, but, and you could do it. There's nothing wrong with doing it, but is it sensible? I'm not sure if it is, but I'm especially not sure, seeing as these first offerings are overpriced, but also, not only that, the technology itself is going to be radically, radically revised as time goes on. It's just, these are just the first glimmerings, you know, the first traces of, you know, design insight that we're seeing regarding these new electric cars. And I mean, I didn't see it coming, because the main reason was, I didn't see it myself, even though I often see trends before they arrive, but I didn't see this one because, for one thing, I didn't realize the electric motor was so much of a powerful torque producer. You know, I didn't realize the tremendous torque that electric motors have compared to combustion engines. I had no idea about that. But also, you know, I just didn't see the battery technology either coming along as fast as it did, or I didn't understand that the lithium-ion technology that we were using already was going to be adaptable for the use in cars. That never occurred to me. Partly because, of course, it's a huge amount of lithium-ion battery material that you need in a car. It's a very heavy object to have a battery that size. And it is, as it turns out, also dangerous. There's a risk of fire. And these batteries don't last forever, and they're very expensive to replace. So it's not very environmentally friendly either. But I just didn't, for all those reasons, I guess, but I didn't see it coming at all, that these electric cars would become such a tremendous fad. I suppose that's what they are, is a fad. And they may be here to stay, of course. They may well be here to stay, but then again, something better is always just around the corner. People are saying that hydrogen is the next fuel. I saw hydrogen on the horizon a long time ago. I mean, I saw people have to tell you, I didn't make it up on my own. I saw people talking about it years ago. So I knew that hydrogen was on the way, and it still is. If they can distribute, if they can, first of all, produce cheap hydrogen, which is difficult because they have to take water, or maybe they can find hydrogen some other way by, you know, using some other method of extracting hydrogen from some other molecule. But the main idea is to extract it from water. And that's a very expensive process because hydrogen is very tightly bound in the water molecule. And it means that you, whatever energy you're going to get when you burn hydrogen, you're going to use a very large amount of that to extract the hydrogen in the first place so that you can produce pure hydrogen fuel probably in a liquid, super cooled form for use in cars. And then, even if you can do all that and do it cheaply, which is still not well understood at all, you still have the problem of distribution, where you have to have gas stations or hydrogen fueling stations which have very cold pumps. You know, cryogenics is the name of that type of technology, where the hydrogen is so cold that it becomes liquid instead of gas, so you can actually transfer the hydrogen quickly and efficiently into the vehicles from the pumps. And there's no danger, because hydrogen, if it splashes on your car or on the road, it just instantly vaporizes and goes away as a gas. But I mean, there's still an explosion risk with liquid hydrogen. It's like, you know, we know the story about the Zeppelin. That was a gaseous hydrogen vehicle. You know, it was borne aloft by the hydrogen. They didn't have helium in those days in the quantities that they needed to make a Zeppelin out of helium. Nor do they probably have it in that quantity today either, but hydrogen was what they used. But hydrogen always represents this enormous explosion risk as well. But they're still talking about hydrogen as coming along. Some new technology could replace the electric vehicles, and then they could be gone. That's all for today. It's September 14th, 2023. It's 22:12 hours Eastern Daylight Time. This is me, Ward Green. I love you. I love you, all of you. This is also my sweet watch, Crow, she is named, and also Cassie, another of my beautiful watches. And they're saying bye for now on my behalf.